Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Hello and welcome to our latest episode of our podcast, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi Shackle, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech. And Let's Talk Letts is our regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects spanning the property rental sector. In this episode, I'm joined by the very famous Megan 18. And Megan is many things. Actually, she's the operations director for Location, an estate and letting agency in North London. She's also the vice president for Arla Property Mark, indeed the youngest ever Arla vice president. And I hope Megan also won't mind me saying that you're also an expert on creating content, reaching out to your audience, and someone who has fully embraced social media and everything it can help agencies to achieve. As one of our previous guests said, Chris Watkins, he says, also, you're very much the queen of TikTok. So let's get started. Welcome, Megan. And just if you'd introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us a little bit more about you, that would be fabulous.
Well, thank you for having me. That was possibly the nicest introduction that I've ever had. So I might have you following me around from now, you know, telling everybody nice things about me. It would be very helpful. I mean, you've got my professional stuff locked in, I guess. I am also a mum. I've got a little boy called Dexter. He's 6. And I've got 3 very fluffy dogs, 3 corgis, Wilson, Dino and Teddy. I feel like I've got fingers in all pies at the moment, you know, from charitable work to regulatory work to day-to-day business. And it's been a little bit bonkers.
It's lovely to have you. And I think that's one of the things that when we were looking and learning all about you, actually, you not only have your fingers in loads of pies, you seem to juggle a million things. So hopefully we'll find out a little bit more today how you do it. So obviously you're a huge advocate of social media, particularly TikTok and Instagram. And if we add LinkedIn to the mix, you now have about 20,000 followers across the platforms, which is very impressive. And you also operate under the username Lettings in a Nutshell. So let's talk first of all about how these channels can help lettings businesses in what is, you know, I suppose quite a challenging market.
Yeah, I think the way you have to think about this is to be someone's letting agent, the first thing they need to do is trust you. And I think building trust is actually quite difficult. And when you've got leaflets coming through your door saying we've got number one market share and, you know, we'll do your management for 5%, that's not really trust building. You're just sort of putting leaflets in front of people. And I think what social media can do is build trust before you've even met them. So imagine if you knew everything about your landlord you were about to meet before you've even got there. Well, they know a lot about you already. So actually half of that has already been done. The fact finding's done, you know, and suddenly you've got people that when you meet them, they know who you are. They already trust you. So then the rest of it's just super easy. It just makes the rest of the whole process easier.
Yeah. And do you find that landlords, as an example, actually, you know, do research, you know, and they're not just looking at somebody's website now, like that they might have done before, or having a look at Google reviews, you know, or Trustpilot reviews or something like that? Are they actually kind of checking out the social channels and, you know, learning a bit about the brand's personality?
I think so, because I think more so than ever, people make choices based on a number of different factors, but a huge part of that is like a corporate responsibility. And I know from my own personal social medias that I run, but also, you know, I help with our companies, our sort of, you know, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and we get so many messages from people and they ask questions or they send messages wanting more information. So you've got that side of things. But then the flip side of that is we're incredibly, as British people, we are incredibly guilty of feeling like we owe people something. So, you know, I put a lot of content out for landlords and tenants where I'm giving them advice for free. And they might go, oh, okay, I didn't know that. And instantly they feel almost more obliged to use me, because it's like a really British thing, isn't it? That you feel like I've given you something, so now you kind of give it back. And I actually got a portfolio of 8 properties from my TikTok account, because the guy basically stumbled across me somehow and suddenly started, you know, going through the back catalogue and then just turned up and gave me the keys.
Wow.
he then subsequently gave us another two properties after that. So it's actually a portfolio of 10. But that would not have happened had I not been dishing out that content. And one of the biggest things I get asked is, well, how would you quantify how much money this is making? You know, is it actually doing a good job? And it's one of my biggest pet hates, because how do you quantify that? Yes, I've got this portfolio. Did I do 18 months of content beforehand to get to that point? Yes, I did. But how much would you pay to get 10 properties onto your portfolio? And that's what you have to kind of balance out, I guess.
Yeah, our marketing team are going to be listening to this, and that's kind of one of the pieces of feedback they always give me. Sometimes everything that happens in marketing, which I guess social media is really an extension and in that domain, is really intangible at the time. And sometimes it's about the brand, isn't it, as much as anything else, and kind of being out there. And Chris Watkin actually said to us last time when we were kind of talking to him, is lots of people fall into the trap of talking about themselves, you know, actually talking about and thinking that people want to know that. What they don't want to know that. What they actually want to know is things that are going to help them, which is, I suppose, what you're enforcing there, isn't it? Is give them things that are valuable.
Absolutely, because once you've got that content building, it builds more and more followers, and that trust continues to build, because it's social proof, isn't it? And if suddenly you've got somebody that's got 10,000, 20,000 followers on their social media versus an estate agent that's literally only posting, "We need your house," you know, and they've got maybe 600 followers, you know, as an individual, we are drawn, we're sheep, we go in the direction. But I think people have to stop thinking of social media as this sort of waste of time, or like, oh, I've got to do a post. And they have to start thinking about it as part of their marketing strategy.
It's kind of fear of missing out, isn't it? It's like, why are all these people, you know, engaging in this? It must be valuable. I probably need to kind of jump on the bus. So how did it all start with you then? How did it become quite a big part of you?
So full disclaimer, it was a total fluke. So basically, I applied for a job to be the ALA exec for the area that I live in, Oxfordshire and Berkshire. And I got the job and I was like, OK, cool. What do I need to do? And they said, oh, your only job really is just to communicate with your members. And I said, brilliant. No problem. I can do that. Give me the list of members that I can reach out to. And they were like, oh, GDPR, we can't. And I was like, well, that's not very helpful, is it? So I then went on LinkedIn and started posting on LinkedIn and, you know, basically adding anyone with the letters Marla after their name. I was adding them, you know, and sort of started it on there. And then I sat on a social media course, a lovely lady called Rachel, and she said, oh, look, TikTok's the next big thing. No one's using it. No one's brave enough to put themselves out there because, you know, estate agents don't get particularly good response. I thought, do you know what? What's the worst that could happen? I thought I'll give it a go. And so the next day I recorded my first TikTok video, and the next day I recorded another video, which is the first one that went viral. So that second video was the one that went poof. And where I sort of managed to build my profile out within our industry is that because nobody else had done it, and I was sort of the testing, like the guinea pig, I guess, people were fascinated to see how it was working and whether it was working. And quite frankly, I don't know if it was working at the time, but I was definitely getting the views, and it was, you know, it was building that traction. So I feel quite lucky that because I was an earlier adopter of it, I got a lot of love along the way. And now every time I'm on TikTok, there's a different person on there who's in property.
Yeah. So that second post that went viral, was it a fantastic piece of content? Was it luck? Like what's your opinion now looking back as to what that happened? And then did that kind of early success really spur you on to then keep doing it? Because sometimes I suppose the feedback that people give or they feel is they have to try for a long time and not maybe get results instantly. And that then kind of is a bit disheartening and puts people off to keep doing it.
I find the content that doesn't do well is the content that isn't about the consumer. So, you know, some people like looking at nice bougie house tours, for example. That is about the consumer, because we all like to look at Rightmove houses that we're never going to buy. Like, that's just human nature, right? That particular video that did well for me was a question that I'd got off my first video of basically, you know, how do I get a pet in my property? You know, how do I work that out? And I did this like video that was like three reasons why landlords shouldn't accept your pet. And then the last reason, I lifted up my dog and said, because they're so cute. And everyone loves a dog, right? Every time I do a pet video, it goes really well. And so I sort of triggered a bit of an, something in the algorithm. And basically, if the engagement's there for that first sort of 90 minutes, then it's probably going to do pretty well. The difficult thing with low numbers is you want to blame the algorithm, and it is to a point, but the algorithm will pick up good content. So sometimes I make content and think, God, that was really good. Why didn't that do well? But the reality is I thought it was good, but nobody else did. So you have to be real about what you're putting out. And sometimes it's a case of going, yeah, do you know what? That didn't hit the mark, but let's keep going. Let's see what else we've got.
And I suppose, have you kind of changed your style over time? Because if we look at a lot of your content, it's pretty amusing. It definitely makes people smile. It's fairly down to earth, I would say. And obviously that can resonate with a letting agent, tenant, landlord, just in terms of the day to day. But also you do seem to strike the balance well, and the fact that you also post about more serious topics and kind of have a voice that people seem to tune into. How have you done it?
Do you know what? It's not actually really that simple, I don't think. So because when I started TikTok, there wasn't a plan. You know, it was very much a, let's just see how this pans out. And it just sort of did well. What I decided to do was make digestible content where it was just me, as if one of my friends had come to ask me a question, how would I answer it? And that tone took a while, because I recorded my first TikTok about 6 times and I sent it to my brother and he said, you sound too posh, like tone it down, start talking like Megan does. So there was that initial flurry. Then when obviously I wanted to go into the presidency, I was very conscious then that the sort of more humorous side of me wasn't showing off. Actually, I've got tons of qualifications. I had a distinction in my level 4, which was unheard of for people in their 20s, you know, and actually I'd almost done myself a disservice to the wider network. So I almost then had to kind of claw that back as well and sort of show a more professional side of myself as well. And then on the flip side of that is I'm a really passionate person about loads of different things. Where I get to it now is I feel like I've settled that concern about what do I post. And now I feel like whatever sort of rings true to me at that time is kind of what I want to talk about. And sometimes there are bits that I record and I sit on it for a day and go, maybe that's a bit too much, a bit too spicy. Maybe I shouldn't do that one. But you've got to find your own balance that works for you and your career goals as well.
And I think that's a really good point. Like even when you talked about the second post and it being linked to the dogs, and then you can hold your dog up and, you know, I think if you can make it about you, so actually it comes a little bit more natural rather than trying to think of things that aren't really naturally in your personality or in your brand, I suppose that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, I think I did a whole post on this actually this week about being authentic. So I've seen a lot of people that have sent me messages going, oh God, they're just trying to do what you did. And I'm like, that's totally fine, because give them a couple of weeks, they'll realize that it's not actually easy to be somebody else on social media. You're better off just going with your 100% true you. And if you commit yourself to that, then you're not going to run out of content, are you? Because you're just being you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose that kind of leads me into one of my next questions, which is, how do you persuade colleagues to also put themselves in front of the camera and, you know, feature with you?
So if you look at the location social media, you will see the same faces, right? We've got Anna, we've got me, we've got Jazz. And those people are what we call our kind of comfortable people. They're very happy to be on camera. No persuading needed. The other people, it's more of a case of trying to understand what their fear is. And a lot of the time it comes back to, I don't want to look stupid. So with those people, we work really closely. We're quite lucky. We've built out a little mini studio in the office. So we've got, you know, there's green screens and all of that. But even if you just take somebody into a quiet room and let them practice, you know, record them, ask them questions, and just see how it flows. You know, I sat down with Jazz and I would ask him questions as if I was a landlord, and he comes alive, you know, and then suddenly now it's easy for him. And I think you have to respect that shoving everybody in front of a camera with no prep is a bad idea, because if they look awkward, nobody's buying from an awkward person. you've got to look confident and you've got to look happy.
Yeah, and we've definitely had people join our pod as guests and they come on, they're quite nervous and they say, I haven't done anything like this before. And we say, you'll be absolutely fine. And obviously we try and make it as relaxed as possible. And then at the end they say, I really love that. I don't mind being a guest again. And actually, I think it is. It's just talking, isn't it? Especially if you're talking about a subject that you're passionate about, then I suppose it becomes easier. So to your point on that and also the fact that you need to kind of be yourself, how do you come up with the content? Because that's, again, where some people have a bit of a brain block, don't they? And the fact that I don't know what to say, I don't know how to say it.
I think it depends on what you want to do for your social media. So, you know, my style has always been quite informative. That's always, whether that was a conscious effort, I have no idea. It just sort of ended up in that place. So mine tends to be, you know, okay, if I had a landlord in this week, this is the question they asked me. This is the question a tenant gave me this week. And then I'm able to use that back into content. So for me, every day we're being fed ideas for content. When it comes to our business page, we've got obviously a mixture of, you know, nice bougie houses that we walk around. And then because our core values very much align with learning and our community, we'll mix that up with community content as well. So what that actually does is a very different thing to what my content does, which is more national. Our content's become hyper local for our business. And what that means is the people following our brand are people who live in our community who probably have houses to sell or houses to buy, or they want to rent somewhere, rather than, you know, Jeremy up in Scotland looking at your pictures. That's fine, but he's not going to help you in your business. So I think you have to decide. I don't think you can build both at the same time. Mine was built before I joined this company, so us sculpting out the businesses was much easier. But I think having a hyper local following is way more important than having 10,000 people following you that are nowhere near your area.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100% agree. So we obviously heard about the second kind of TikTok that you did that obviously went viral. Tell us about some other kind of successful pieces of content that either you thought were going to do really well and then didn't, and then you kind of questioned why, or things that, you know, didn't have high expectation of and suddenly did, you know, potentially went viral.
So there's actually one video in particular that I find really fascinating, because at the time it got about 200 views, which, you know, was fine. And since then, I think we're on about 13,000 views. So what you have to remember about TikTok is a video doesn't die on TikTok. If someone's algorithm is, you know, working to that piece of content you've got, it will come up for them years down the line. So it might not perform where you want it to, you know, on day one, but, you know, day 150, suddenly it could boom. And I've got actually two pieces that are doing that at the moment. One is somebody that said, I've got an interview to be a junior negotiator. What questions would you ask? So that one is doing exceptionally well. And then another one that I did was, if you can't pay your rent, these are the things that you should think about, or tips or something along those lines. And it's, you know, about not burying your head in the sand and all that. And that's got an obscene amount of saves. So where people are clearly having difficult times, they're saving it and going to come back to it when they, you know, if they need it. So I think those bits are ones that kind of grew, I guess, and sort of did well afterwards. But some of the ones that have gone really well are so random. Like, I don't know if you ever remember the TV show The Mighty Boosh, but there was this like really weird character that lived in a cave. And like, I used the voice to pretend I was, you know, a weird person on evaluation. And like, that's done exceptionally well.
Oh, wow.
It's so strange as well. I don't know why it did well. But it was clearly one of those Sunday morning, oh yeah, that would be funny, let's give that a go.
And going back to obviously what you said before about like why some people don't want to go in front of the camera or even on recording or whatever, is because they don't want to look stupid and they feel that they're going to do a bad job. Have you ever had backlash? Have you ever kind of, do you get negative comments? Like, or actually, even if you do, are you kind of a bit immune to it now? Because actually, overwhelmingly, you get a lot more positive than negative.
So it was actually really interesting. So at the end of last year, we did, I don't know if you've ever seen that TV show in America where they get the celebrities to read mean tweets about themselves out on camera. We thought it would be really fun to do that in the office because we get so many weird comments and stuff. And when we pulled out mine, we realized that actually I didn't really get any bad comments, but what I did get was a lot of weird comments. So I seem to attract a very strange part of the internet. I don't know why, but I did have a situation where I did post a video, which I actually did take down. And it was, the question was something like, what would you do if you were a man for the day? And I did this tongue-in-cheek video that said, well, I'd get paid the same, you know, as I would have, you know, like made this sort of like gender pay gap joke. And well, it went down like a cup of hot sick. Yeah. And I got honestly the vilest men on the internet, I think, had written, you know, it was awful threats of, you know, sexual violence and all sorts of stuff. And I went, you know what? I didn't need this. So I just took it down because I was like, I don't need this. So that's the only time that I ever went, whoa, the internet is bad.
Yeah. Okay. So obviously, you're obviously the vice president of Arla and the youngest person to hold that position, which is fantastic. And the youngest female. So big congratulations to you.
Thank you.
I wondered how important you feel that your age is, I suppose, in the role with tenants tending to be younger, and the growing build-to-rent market, packaging up lettings, like concierge service bills, everything kind of included, which appeals to Gen Z. What do you plan to bring to your role at Property Mark? Is there going to be a change?
Yeah, so I'll tell you, I'll actually let you into a secret. I haven't actually told anybody before. The age thing was massively important to me. So I'd always thought I'd wanted to do it. Never thought I would be in a position that I'd even get a chance. But Harry, who I know you've had, Angharad Truman, she's very much one of my inspirations. And when I watch what she does, and she was really annoyed, actually, because she was like, well, I was going to be the youngest one. I was like, I know, but I'm younger than you. So I'm going to, you know, yes. I'm gonna take it. So
she said, I think she said she's going to be the youngest for like a really short time until you come in, and that's
it's something like nine months or something stupid between us, but I was like, I'm taking it. But what was important to me was I wanted to do it at this age. I wanted to be the youngest one. And the reason I wanted to was because I feel as an industry that we're losing talent from the younger generation. And that, you know, when I look at people who are older than me, I see talented agents everywhere. So many, they'll obviously eventually retire. What's coming behind us is a lot of people who the work-life balance doesn't work. They're not inspired like we were. You know, when I was a junior neg, I worked like a dog. We would never do that to people now. So for me, I wanted to sort of be that representation of change. And really, with what I've been doing on social media, I'd gravitated a younger following. And the average Arla member is male and 43. So for me, I was like, well, I want to get people on the career track earlier. And that was why, for me, the age thing was so important, because I thought it stood like a good like flag in the ground of, no, you know, the next generation, we've got to give them some love. We've got to make some investments, and we have to change how businesses operate, because it doesn't attract Gen Z. So then leading on to things like build to rent, you know, build to rent works because we as a generation, sort of millennials and Gen Z, who typically rent these places, we've grown up with renting stuff. You know, we use Klarna, so we're essentially renting our money for 3 months, and we lease our cars, and we get contracts on our phones. We don't buy things outright anymore. And so build to rent is almost like we're sort of renting a community. You know, yeah, so we're sort of leasing that. And I think if I was, you know, 22, new city, I'd definitely go into a build to rent. You know, you've got a community there, you've got your gym, you've got, you know, cinema rooms in some of them, you know, and I think that for a lot of people, that really aligns with our generation. And I think it's great.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think we're an impatient generation, and we don't have to wait for things now like we used to. But also, you know, I suppose in one way, build to rent for me, I kind of sometimes link it to, like, it's like being at university, but actually probably sometimes having a job and getting paid. Like, you don't necessarily need to kind of, you know, you get all the social aspects of it, yeah, and somewhere actually really nice to live, because some of the places are lovely.
So nice.
Yeah. So I totally agree. So you're also a podcaster, and Lettings in a Nutshell launched, I think, in January 2022. Is that right?
Yes, it did. Yeah.
So with so many hats to wear, we're interested to know about the lettings industry and what, you know, what you're excited for in 2024. Obviously, there is lots of challenges at the moment. I don't think we've actually had a year where we haven't said that. You know, we've obviously got the economy, we've got legislation, we've got market forces. But obviously, you're definitely someone that is bringing a positive kind of voice to the industry. Where do you think the opportunities are and what can letting agents do to embrace them?
That's a very good question. I think... Well, I'm really excited about the renters reform bill. And I know that sounds like a funny thing to say because a lot of people are dreading the renters reform. And don't get me wrong, there are massive parts of it that I dread. What I'm excited about is that the Housing Act that essentially underlines all of our lettings legislation is actually the same age as me, was actually a year older than me. But, you know, so in 30 odd years, there's been no massive changes to our lettings legislation. Obviously, we've got tweaks, you know, with the Tenant Fee Act and all that. But overall, we've had no reform. And you think how different the world is since 1988 versus where we are in 2024. And we think, and we've got people going, oh, no, but we can't change it. And you're going, well, but you've changed a lot in 34 years. So we do need to reform it. Now, do I agree totally with what they're going to do? Not necessarily, but I do believe that a reform is needed. And so for me, whenever there's a big change, there's a big opportunity for us as letting agents. And I think that we can panic, but all panic does is send panic to our landlords. But if we embrace it and we find positivity in the changes, that message of confidence spreads to our landlords. And when they feel confident, they're not going to leave the market. They're not going to panic. So we are at the moment causing a housing crisis in itself, you know, just on our own without all the help of all the government mess ups. We as an industry have to relax and we have to go, OK, this is the change. What are we going to do about it?
And I think as well, based on, you know, what we were saying earlier, it's going to provide a huge amount of content. Isn't it?
Oh yeah.
For agents to talk to their landlords about, to talk to their tenants about, and there, you know, there's so many aspects of it that could be shared, really, and you know, the fountain of knowledge out to the industry and definitely to their local marketplace. I think I saw one of your TikToks and you said you were going through like the renters reform bill at a high level, and you said, look, actually, for good landlords, they don't need to worry about it anyway.
Ultimately, good landlords and good letting agents want safe properties. They want tenants to feel at home. They want all these things. So overall, you know, most landlords don't evict bad tenants, good tenants. So bad tenants will still be taken care of with the, you know, the plan provisions under Section 8. So, you know, you can still get rid of a tenant in theory. It has a layer of friction. It does. But equally, if you're, you know, child was renting a property and they were being uplifted or there was mold all over it, you would be the first person to go, I'm not okay with this. I think my biggest issue is at the moment is this anti-landlord rhetoric that keeps being chucked around. And I think as a government, they really need to change that, because I'm seeing more and more articles where they're almost begging landlords to sort of support the local authority in terms of, you know, social housing. And you think, well, you're now treating them like a housing provider, but for the last 5-6 years, you've just, you know, you've thought of them as the enemy almost. So yeah, you're totally right. Content coming out of your ears though.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a few kind of more quick fire questions if I can then before we finish.
Yeah, sure.
So is the time of day you post important?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you want me to elaborate?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah. Everyone's going, okay, why?
So I think for two reasons. So if you go onto, like, for example, TikTok and you look at your following, you can look at all the analytics behind the scene and it will tell you what time of day the majority of your followers are online. Now, if you post your video at when they're in the, you know, in the middle of the day, for argument's sake, it might be that the middle of the day is your time. But for mine, it's 9 o'clock at night on TikTok, because most of my followers are probably got home from work, put the kids to bed, you know, made their dinner and they're sat on the sofa and they start doom scrolling, right? Yeah. If your content gets engagement at the start, then it helps it spread further. But every platform's got a different sweet spot, so you have to research it. So typically I tend to post on LinkedIn around sort of 8 a.m. roughly. I quite often schedule my posts to go out at that time. But then TikTok, as I said, is more of an evening thing. Sometimes I just get it out and I'm like, I don't care. Yeah. And I think sometimes you just have to accept that. So for me, yes, time of day is important, but do I always stick to it? Absolutely not.
And what about day of the week?
I don't tend to post a huge amount of the weekends. Certainly on LinkedIn, I don't post anything at the weekends because I don't think many people are looking at LinkedIn. So I don't typically post at the weekends. And then on TikTok, it would really depend. If it was quite informative content, I wouldn't post it at the weekend. But if it was like a bit more fun, then I probably would give it a go.
So what about your favourite social platform?
It's fun because I feel like LinkedIn is my head and TikTok's my heart. Okay. So like LinkedIn's my very logical place, you know, and I get to do professional Megan. But with TikTok, you do get to be a bit more relaxed, a bit more fun. So I think TikTok's got my heart, really.
Okay. And what about, obviously, you mentioned you went on a social media course long time ago and you had a trainer called Rachel. And she said to you at that time, TikTok's the next big thing. Get on the bandwagon now.
Yeah.
What's the next thing coming?
I don't know. I mean, Threads died a death, didn't it? I went for a nap and I woke up and we had a new social media platform, which I think I've posted on once. I don't think it's clear yet. I don't think we know. I think TikTok's still developing. You know, TikTok's now the algorithms for this year. They released a whole document. I bet 99% of people that tell you that their content isn't doing well haven't read the TikTok algorithm, you know, report, because it will tell you what you need to make to do well. For example, they're saying this year that they're prioritizing more longer form content, which has always been completely against what they've always done before. And I think they're making a play for YouTube and they're trying to encourage longer form content. You know, they're trying to encourage landscape videos this year, and something called creative bravery, which I haven't quite worked out what creative bravery is yet, but I think it's stuff that's a bit more unusual. But TikTok's also said they don't want high polished, you know, 4K, high definition videos anymore. They want you to film it on your phone. They don't want the high quality.
They want real life. Yeah,
exactly. So content like mine works really well. But for example, we record our property tours in quite high quality content. So suddenly we're going, ooh, okay, we need to scale that back a little bit.
So just in terms of timing then, obviously, I know you said earlier, like, you know, you would think of something in your, you know, your day to day life, you know, oh, the dog's doing this. I'll actually, you know, I'm going to post about that, let's say, because there's a relevant link. Let's say it's a 30 second TikTok, but, you know, you've got animation and a whole load of stuff going on. How long does it genuinely take you to create it, edit it, publish it?
I guess, yeah. So if you've got like a high edit, I don't tend to do a lot of high edit, let's be honest. So if it's anything super high production, it's probably been taken care of by the marketing team. But most of the stuff I produce is myself. So I don't think it takes that long, really. You know, for me to edit a complicated TikTok is somewhere between 5 and 10 minutes. I think the biggest thing is what I said at the start of this podcast was that people need to stop thinking of social media as a time sucker and start thinking about it as part of their marketing strategy. And I think that suddenly if you start switching your headspace on that, that you'll find the time. And sometimes I'll bulk record, you know, so for example, on LinkedIn, yeah, I'll post somewhere sort of 3 or 4 times a week. A good 50% of that I've probably put together over the weekend and chucked it under door scheduling. So I think you just find that time, you know, wherever it sits for you. Sometimes content will come into my head at really random times, normally in the bath. So I quite often have to write it down and then try and do it the next day. But I quite often, the joke is always, if I've got good hair, I'll definitely get a good 5 or 6 videos done that day. If I've got hair that's not looking so great, it's not a day for it.
No, you have to write it down and do it tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've really enjoyed that session and I think I've learned loads, actually. And I've got loads of ideas now myself in terms of, I want to talk to my team about it. But I think it's a really inspiring session. And I think the main message is people just need to give it a go, don't they? And actually really just embrace it.
Totally. Absolutely. I think you just got to think, the worst that's going to happen is you're going to get someone's sort of slightly mean comment on a post, but you're going to get that even if you've got 10,000 followers or whether you've got 2,000 followers or whether you've got 100,000. It doesn't matter. Yeah. You're still going to get it. So if you are prepared for it, just, you know, just do it.
So before you go, our regular listeners of Let's Talk Let's will know we always end every podcast by asking our guests for a funny story or anecdote.
Do you know what? I thought a lot about this because I knew I was coming on and I was trying to think about it because it's been quite a few years since I was like on the ground as a letting agent. And obviously, like back in the day, you'd have so many. And I had this, I remember as a junior negotiator having this story that that basically I went to a house that we'd just taken on and met the owner, and he was a bit unhappy. And he was telling me as he was showing me around the house that they basically had like a, I don't think an infestation is the right word, but like basically their garden had been full of badgers, and badgers are protected. Wow. And so it makes it really difficult to sell the house because you've got these protected badgers. And he was like, but I've moved them on and they're all gone. And I'm talking to him and I'm like, but there's a dead badger in your pond.
Oh,
and no. And he was like, what? And I was like, there's a dead badger in your pond. So he walks down to the pond and I'm thinking like, I don't really want to be here for that. Like, I'm not good with dead things. And he starts like prodding it with a stick just to make sure like wasn't, you know, like a cat or something. And it was definitely a badger. It'd obviously gone for a drink, got stuck. Anyway, so at that point I'm like, okay, clearly a badger. I should probably leave. And he was, he then proceeded to winch it out with a spade. And like, obviously the smell then gets you and you're like, what? Like, this is not good. Then he starts digging a hole for it. And I'm stood there thinking, what the heck is going on? Now, badger deaths, you're supposed to report, especially when you're under a protection order. And he's going to me whilst burying this badger. You mustn't tell anybody about this. This is, you know, like, and I'm just stood there at like 22 thinking, oh my God, what am I witnessing? He's basically asking me to be part of his like badger mafia. So that's always
there was a lot more buried under that grass.
100%. It was clearly like a badger graveyard. But I literally, honestly, until like recently, I didn't tell anybody. Over a decade later, because I was like, oh yeah, the badgers. I can't tell anybody about the badgers.
Even when I see one at the side of the road, I'm just like, oh, I bet someone's dumped it there. Like, you know, yeah. I just like they can't all just appear and all get run over. Like, there's just too many, isn't there, in terms of what happens.
I've never seen one alive. Maybe this podcast is turning into like a conspiracy podcast now.
Yeah. Maybe we should. We're going to research badger deaths.
Yeah. Badger murders.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, Megan. That was really brilliant. Really brilliant. So for all of our listeners, to ensure you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And again, there's loads of information on podcasts out there as well, isn't there? Like, you know, that's another fantastic social channel that's definitely emerging all the time. And obviously, if you like what you hear, please leave us a review. And thank you very much for listening.
Let's Talk Let's, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.